Listeners, I welcome you to Afterthought. As a chat and QA outgrowth of system mastery, it's like the best kind of cancer. This week, we're settling a deep question that has plagued nerds for years. Naturally, I speak of the proper pronunciation of .gif. We take into consideration the words of the original developer of the famous graphics interchange format, the musings of linguists and modern web historians, and then we settle it once and for all. After tonight's show, you'll truly understand what file format choosy moms choose. And now, Afterthought. And welcome back. All right. As always, I'm Jeff. This is Afterthought, the chat companion piece podcast to System Mastery, and my co-host John is here with me. How are you?
I am here.
Just here? That's all you got for me?
Yeah, that's basically all I can give you today.
Wow. I thought I was tired. Okay, so this week we are going to have a couple different things to talk about. I got a few fan questions to go through. But first, we might as well go ahead and acknowledge last week's episode.
Yes, that was a great find that we had.
Yeah, the Duckman RPG, which is
totally a real thing.
A real thing, 100%. Yes, if you haven't heard of Fantasy Strike Games, it's just because you're not cool enough.
Yeah, come on, guys, get it together.
My uncle totally worked at Fantasy Strike Games, and he got me a copy of the Duckman RPG for free, but I had to promise not to show it to anybody.
Yeah, that's what everyone did. Everyone's uncle who worked at Fantasy Strike Games gave them a copy of Duckman, but no one was able to see it.
And that is why they went out of business. It was a terrible marketing plan. Just wasn't going to be functional for them to just give their copies away for free to their relatives only and then never mention it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this means I'm being cut out of my uncle's will. Because
well, also, fortunately, your uncle's will only continues to have copies of Duckman in it, so it's fine.
So, okay, for realsies, though, that was our stupid April Fool's episode. We did our very best to review an RPG that did not exist.
And, you know, I think we did a decent job of reviewing something that does not exist.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Yeah, I would give it a B, the game, not our review of the game that didn't exist.
Yeah, but the review, however, A+.
A+.
One of the best ever.
I think so. I gotta imagine Siskel and Ebert couldn't do a review that good.
Nah, fuck them.
Yeah, whatever. So, there you go. Now, if you're interested in the Duckman RPG after hearing our dumb review of it, you'll be thrilled to learn that we have taken our own notes after listening to the episode ourselves and written the Duckman RPG.
More or less.
More or less. I mean, it's only about 15 pages long, because, really, what do you want from me? Dungeons & Dragons? It's a stupid project I did in 3 hours.
Yeah, I mean, this pamphlet of rules is about the same as you would get from that Ghostbusters RPG we reviewed, so whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got exactly as much role-playing in it as Car Wars. So so we can put that out for you. Now, the Duckman RPG can be downloaded right off of this page, so feel free to download it and rip right into it. If you've been really mad at us in the past about our poor reviews of games that you happen to like the book that the game was based on, then this is your chance to take us to task for how bad you think we think Duckman is.
Yeah, well, and if you are a super fan of the Duckman series and think that we did not do a good job portraying Duckman in our made-up RPG, great, I don't care.
Rip into it, by all means. We went, and here's how I want you to do this as a view. If you're going to do a review of our game, remember that we tried our best to write the kind of game that we would review. So it's supposed to be garbage. It's bloated. The feats don't make any sense. And the crap system, while funny, probably doesn't work because the bonuses are too big. Plus, people pointed out that we had feats in the game 3 years before Dungeons & Dragons 3rd Edition came out.
That's probably because we're visionaries.
Yes, yeah, because my uncle was very inventive.
Yeah.
And also that it's very easy to have a character with no hit points. Which, again, that's fine. That's Grandmama has no hit points.
You just get hit and you're done.
Yeah, they fall out of the fight.
Yeah.
We corrected those two well, we didn't correct the feats problem. We're just still visionaries. But we corrected the hit points problem in the final release. So if anyone wants to play the Duckman RPG and then report back to us on how it plays, I would love that.
Yeah. Let me know if your group likes playing as a bunch of overly antagonistic assholes that try to stop each other from doing the most minor of goals. That would be great.
Yep, perfect. So there you go. What else do we want to talk about this week? Now, we specifically picked Duckman to build as our RPG because we figured this is a license. This is a cartoon that existed in the 90s when basically licensed games were kind of at the height of their power.
Yeah, you'd find weird licenses for just stuff that you would never have imagined to have a license for in addition to the big names.
Yeah, like Lawnmower Man or...
Yeah, you just get weird crap. And it also is a cartoon that exists in a space where when you mention Duckman, people are like, I kind of remember that that existed, but you very rarely find someone who's like, oh shit, yeah, I was into Duckman, that was my jam.
I didn't find out until after we wrote the goddamn, or sorry, not wrote, but reviewed the goddamn fake book, that Duckman had 4 seasons.
Oh yeah, man.
I thought it was just a 2-season thing, but no, they went all the way through 4 seasons, and it actually had a definitive ending. Like, Duckman gets married to a character that's introduced in the 3rd season, and Cornfed gets married, and King Chicken gets married.
Yeah, it's like a, really, it's like a Shakespearean comedy, in that the whole thing goes through and then everyone gets married at the end.
Exactly.
If there's one thing I can compare Duckman to, it's
Much Ado About Nothing. Yeah.
It's really the As You Like It of cartoon ducks.
It's the Two Gentlemen of Verona, except there's a pig detective. But no, okay, King Chicken marries Bernice.
Well, of course he does.
And it's a happy ending.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Duckman's name is Eric.
And who knew that?
That
who
is
could have possibly
so
known?
Weird to me that the Duckman's name is Eric Tiberius Duckman, and that Cornfed's name is Willibard Fivel Cornfed.
Yeah. Why not?
Awesome. So yeah, anyway, we picked it because we figured it would sit right in that zeitgeist where people would be like, yeah, that probably exists.
Yeah.
I mean, it ought to.
But we couldn't do a property that was super popular because if we were like, alright, here's something based off of, like, I don't know, Voltron. People would go, no, I know for certain there is no Voltron RPG. This is bullshit.
Yeah.
But if you go, Duckman, they're like, maybe?
Someone immediately pointed out after we posted it that the only Google thing they could find was a Reddit link to us. And I was like, that just proves it. Reddit knows everything. Okay, we also picked Duckman because it represents one of our least favorite things you could do in a role-playing game, from like a licensed role-playing game, which is pure humor. Like, the whole point of the game is just to deliver shtick to each other as hard as you can.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's... We've talked before about the essence of comedy in games and how hard it is to translate something that's purely humorous into a RPG medium. And I think Duckman's definitely an example of something where, you know, you think Duckman, you're like, oh, well, okay, they're probably going to just take the license and strap guns to it. Like, oh my gosh, Duckman, and then aliens invade.
It's a duck and a pig, and they're running as fast as they can.
Oh, come on now.
2 giant cats. But the big thing with comedy in the RPGs is you tend to lose everything else to it. So a lot of times when you have the comedy RPG, everything gets sacrificed on the altar of being goofy. And I think we really tried to capture that in the Duckman RPG, specifically in that the only way you get ahead in the game is by fucking with other people, which means there's no reason to do anything in the game. Mm. Like, this is straight up the fucking war games of RPGs, in that only way to win is not to play.
The movie war games. I was like, it's the 40K?
Yes. This is the 40K of RPGs, whereas Dark Heresy is obviously the comedy of RPGs.
It is kind of funny. Yeah, I think that's definitely true. These games tend to force you to play as funny as possible, whether or not that really works as a game. Now, for the edition that you can download and play, I actually added a second way to gain XP, just because that is true. There's no reason to do the story other than just fuck with each other forever and then think the new episode will fix it.
Yeah.
Like, Home Inspector comes in. All right, well, I'm just going to keep trying to fondle any women I can. Oh, well, why would you do that? Because it's the only way I can gain XP.
Yeah. There's no reason to interact with anything outside of other players.
So for the final release version of the official Duckman RPG, you also get XP for completing a task or mission as set by the Duckmaster.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's still the only other way you can do it is to fuck with people. So optimal play is fucking with each other for 20 minutes and then a 2-minute cheesy resolution that doesn't make sense.
Yay.
It's perfect. It's a cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked about a few humor games in the past. We've talked about Tales from the Floating Vagabond, which, again, I ultimately really like, but it does have a lot of shtick for shtick stake in it, which kind of buries it a little bit.
Yeah, there's... it's like a lot of the comedy RPGs where you get a bunch of crap that's just thrown in there that you don't actually need, just for the sake of comedy, which is fine here or there, but, a lot of RPGs tend to throw in a little too much just for trying to get some yucks.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
I'll give you a good example. The Ghostbusters one we did?
Mm-hmm.
There's that sequence... Here's something that drives me nuts about licensed comedy games. They are never written as well as the license on which they are based.
Obviously.
And it's never as obvious as in the Ghostbusters RPG, where in the example of skill usage, they have Bill Murray's character fail a skill attempt and end up trying to eat a telephone.
Yeah. I'm just like, okay, I'm sure you think that that is humorous, but stop it. Just, you're not good at this.
I mean, I've got no problem with the old West End Games Ghostbusters RPG because it's, you know, probably playable. It's like four rules.
Yeah.
It had some definite clunker rules to it. The whole XP is the same thing as HP mechanic was kind of dumb. But ultimately, when you're trying to write humorously but also true to the character, you can't have Venkman eat a telephone.
Yeah, and the weird thing is that eating a telephone comes up like twice in the 30 pages worth of rules that are in there.
I'm trying to figure of what character would eat a telephone in a humor. Like, Stimpy? Who's your character?
I mean, you can have, like, Slimer eat a telephone.
Slimer, sure. The Tasmanian Devil?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, that's the... But, you know, it's a Ghostbusters game. You don't have the Tasmanian Devil in it.
No. And it... A lot of the funny things that a lot of games will put in there can mostly just be adjudicated by saying, all right, that's funny, let's have that happen.
Yeah.
There's... A lot of things, like represented in the Duckman game that we have, the sort of vomiting for effect as a skill. It's the same thing like the belching thing from the Tales from the Floating Vagabond, or any, like, game design as a skill. God.
How many games is that in?
It's terrible, it's in several.
It's almost as prevalent as the pizza thing.
Yeah, it was just like, ho-ho, don't design games, it's a worthless skill. And I'm like, yes, I know it is, don't... put this in fucking everything.
We apologize to all the game designers who actually listen to us, which seems to be a lot.
Yeah, game designers, don't put a skill in your game that is game design. That's dumb and circle jerky.
plus, it's been done already. Palladium did it, for God's sake.
Stop it. If Palladium did it, you know it was a bad idea. Oh!
That's a good t-shirt.
I want to get a t-shirt that just says Palladium did it.
Palladium did it. It's kind of an unfair t-shirt to have, because Rifts covers a lot of
damage. Oh, yeah, exactly. Anytime someone's like, I'm making a game, and it's based on zombies, Palladium did it. They've got these old mythical gods, and Palladium did it.
Palladium did it real badly.
Oh, Palladium did it poorly. That's what the back says, just poorly.
Poorly. Don't worry about copying them, though, because it doesn't matter. We actually got a question recently that I wanted to discuss today, and it was from Donnie Sababo.
Sweet.
Who we answered all of his questions except one, so I want to cover it today. And Donnie also asked us, have you ever thought about reviewing non-core books? Like, specifically, have you thought about recording source books such as supplements or adventure modules?
Yes, we have. Next question.
Well, okay, not only have we done it, but we have done that already.
Yeah.
We did that once with Urban Arcana, the D20 Modern supplement that added elves and gnomes.
Yeah, though that was sort of rolled into our review of a core book.
Oh yeah, we managed to squeeze two episodes out of that, but mostly it was because D20 Modern is so boring by itself that without adding elves and magic and things, it's the worst game you could play.
Yeah, it's the problem with basically any generic core set to something. Like, you can look at something like Fate and go, oh, you could play anything with this, but reading the book itself, you're like, this is so generically boring. It's the same thing with GURPS or Hero System or anything else.
Thankfully, no one's asked us to review any of those yet. Like, someone review GURPS, because we're going to be like, no.
Also, review what GURPS? Jesus Christ.
It's a lot of GURPS.
So many GURPS.
I'll consider Traveler, because that's a weird core book, but...
Yeah.
But the GURPS is off my table. Now, I think that this does lead us to some good discussion, though. Let's talk... First of all, I bet you're really excited about a supplement that you might own.
I currently have a supplement book that we will be doing something with in the future that will be a fan favorite as well as my favorite.
And I think that's all you want to say about it. But rest assured, it's amazing. And what would you say is your... let's talk about supplements for a while. What would you say is your favorite supplement book? You have the whole gamut of all role-playing history.
I know, which just makes it really hard. Because most of the time, I look at a supplement book, and so often you get that, at best, like 50-50 split of like... Oh, there was a couple cool, like, classes or some neat setting info, and then they just threw in a bunch of dumb crap.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the complete whatever books from AD&D.
The old brown cover, second edition AD&D completes.
Oh, yeah. You'd have, like, oh, here's a couple really interesting ways to do this class, and then a couple really dumb, stupid things that no one wants to do.
Well, it's funny, because those got progressively better, like, as they figured out their shit and stopped being boring. So the first... So the first four or five of them are atrocious.
Oh, yeah.
And they're so by the numbers that they hurt. Like, the complete fighter's got, like, the really poor fighter, the somewhat rich fighter, the Amazon fighter, the fighter who lives in the wilderness, the fighter who lives on a boat. And then you cut to Ranger, same crap. Actually, it's not true. Ranger was a later one, but Rogue, same crap. Poor Rogue, rich Rogue, etc. And then they finally got to Bard and Ranger, and they were like, well, no one plays these classes anyway. Let's go ahead and go crazy. You can play as a rogue who turns into a tree that grows a third arm. Sorry, a ranger that does that. Or a bard that only uses bardic magic through whistling.
Whee! Yeah.
So, I think some of those books had some potential. I've always, I'd say my favorite out of those was always the Complete Book of Humanoids.
Huh.
Which is 22 races that you could play, and then a bunch of really strong arguments why you shouldn't.
That was always one of those other things in those supplements, is they'd be like, here's a thing. Probably only have this as NPCs, though, but we'll give you full stats on them.
Yeah.
And you're like, don't. If you've got a thing that you want only to exist outside of player control, don't give me rules for players.
Well, you notice how D&D has gotten progressively friendlier to players over the years? Like just in character creation, it's gotten friendlier. Like, in second edition, your elf had plus 2 dexterity, minus 2 constitution. That was... In third edition, it was plus 2 dexterity and plus 2 wisdom or something. So, all of a sudden, you had 2 plus 2s. And then in fourth edition, it became plus 2 to one thing, and then plus 2 to another thing of your choice. And I'm sorry, in third edition, it was actually plus 1s, wasn't it?
No, it was plus 2 and minus 2.
Oh, you're right. It was plus 2 and minus 2.
Unless you were a half-orc, and then it was plus 2 and minus 2 and minus 2.
Yeah, okay, you're right. But in fourth edition, all of a sudden, it was just 2 plus 2s.
Yeah.
So the games have been getting nicer. Well, the Complete Book of Humanoids has multiple races in it that get minus 2, minus 2.
Yay!
So, like, if you want to play as a goblin, which, why wouldn't you? Goblins are great. Then you're at minus 2 dexterity, minus 2 charisma.
Yeah, sweet. Yeah. I think you mean intelligence and charisma.
I probably do. They should be more dexterous.
Yes.
But whatever. I haven't read that book in forever. And when I did, it was mostly just to read those cool dinosaurs.
You and your dinosaurs.
The Saurials. They were so cool. They were dinosaurs that could only communicate through smell, which is why I associate with them.
Yes. I really like any of the supplements that really give me... both a, like, class or race or something like that, and some extra setting material, without it specifically saying, like, this is how you have to run your game if you're running in a certain place. Because a lot of the time, when you get an adventure or a supplement, they say, all right, this major town is doing this, this is what's happening in it, and this is what everyone thinks about whatever. And unfortunately, if you got it after you had already established that city, you're like, oh, well, this doesn't work at all with how I've played this.
Would you say, you still haven't said what your favorite was, but I'm guessing based just on that, that you'd probably like those exalt-type splat books?
Well, they usually had, like, directional ones, which gave you the info on, like, this is what's happening in the north and the south. And those were terrible.
Those are worthless. I'm talking about, like, Exalted, the Big Book of Lunars. Which, okay, Lunars has always been a bad book because I've never gotten those rules right. But fine, Dragonbloods or whatever, you know.
Well, there were some, like, specifically the one about the gods for Exalted was really good because it fleshed out more of the pantheon of sort of what was going on, but it also gave you ideas about elementals and demons and stuff like that. And it gave you some interplay between, like, these gods have these interests, and these have that, and this is how the cosmology works. And it was really useful without saying, this is how things have to be in your setting.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't specifically make any one place a thing, as much as it just gave you a bunch of stuff to play with. And that's what I want out of a supplement, is just ways to play with what I'm already playing.
Yeah. Now, I think I'd have to say my favorite would be the Complete Book of Psionics from AD&D 2nd Edition.
Oh, man.
Because it's extremely terrible, but it's so cool that they tried their best to introduce this complicated system to the game, and then no one would ever let me use it. Ever. Ever.
Well, because the second edition psionics were just like, what do? Oh, I make that guy explode. Can you defend against it? Is he a psionic?
Yeah.
No, then he dies.
It's hilarious how they reversed that trend. In second edition, no one had defenses against psionics except other psionics. In third edition, psionics only works on other psionics.
Oh, yeah, you're like, I'm going to try it, do a thing. Is that guy a psionic? No? Oh, well, it doesn't work then.
Plus, you needed to have every stat be good in third edition to be a psionic. It was hilarious.
Ugh.
But that second edition book was so... The art was all weird and out there. It was clearly leftover hippie art. It was just so interesting. All right. Worst supplement. I can go first on this one to give you some time to think, because I know what the worst supplement ever written is.
Oh?
Yeah, I do. It's a little something called Rifts...
Spirit West?
Pantheons of the Megaverse.
Oh, no, I love Pantheons. I'm saying Spirit West.
Well, then we each get to talk about one. So Rifts Conversion Book 2, Pantheons of the Megaverse, is the Rifts game that finally gives you, or book that finally gives you some gods. Except, you know, they really don't like gods in Palladium, so instead they're all alien intelligences and tentacle balls and so on that are masquerading as the actual gods of ancient Sumeria and what have you. They're worthless. They're completely useless. Every one of them's got a million billion hit points and can kill anything near them. Or they're spectacularly weak for no good reason. So they don't really fit into the game at all. There's a class in it that you can play called the Priest that gets an ability that's supposed to be you have a power that your god has, and then just doesn't mention that ever again. Like, you don't know how to get those, you don't know what the list of powers is. It's just not in there. There are a bunch of races you can play as, which are so spectacularly overpowered as to just be jokes.
Oh yeah, you get the 100-handed ones.
The 100-handed ones have 3d6 times 10,000 MDC.
Woo!
But then they point out, that's probably too powerful if you want to play as one, so divide it in half.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Your 90,000 MDC character is going to be just fine. The redeeming features out of it were the hilarious, over-the-top 90s comic-style art. And,
Man, getting that art for Ishtar with that super feathered hair.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
Super good.
And looks then like she just stepped out of Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, same thing with Aphrodite, who looked like the cover of Showgirls, like personified. But then the other really good thing out of that book was the race of scorpion people.
Yeah,
which was super cool.
Scorpion people.
I don't remember what they were called. Probably just scorpion people, but they were really neat.
Yeah, it finally let me live my dream as being the last few minutes of the second Mummy movie as The Rock.
You take any opportunity you can to play as The Rock characters.
If I can play as The Rock in anything, that's what I'm going to do.
Have you heard? I just heard this today. He's been cast in a Disney movie now. Their next big singing princess movie, which is called Moana, and it's like about the discovery of Hawaii or something. So he's playing the god of like currents called Maui, and he's gonna sing in it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Everything about this is wonderful. Nothing you have told me is bad.
You're looking forward to The Rocks. I mean, again, we're both huge fans of Journey 2, The Mysterious Island, which should be the worst movie in history. Because it's the sequel to Journey to the Center of the Earth, which was a terrible movie, but simply replacing Brendan Fraser with The Rock and then using 3D technology to bounce berries off his pectorals, fixed it.
Yeah, The Rock fixes everything.
It's perfect. He is the universal solvent to bad movies. He will get that movie running. Okay, so there you go. Pantheons of the Megaverse, and then I'll kick it over to John. What's the worst supplement?
Totally Rift Spirit West, because it's just... God, we have already done the, and then an apocalypse happened and the Native Americans got all their magic back. And you're like, I know, I get it.
Yeah.
I get that every single white person who wrote an RPG in the 90s decided they wanted to give the Indians their magic back. That's great. But we had New West, which was just like, here's the Wild West, but with laser guns and robo horses. And you're like, oh, that's neat. And then they're like, and then there's the fierce Native Americans with their MDC fetishes,
yeah.
And they have bone armor.
It's
and they,
so racist.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderfully racist. And they're like, they have feather headdresses that give them magical powers. I'm like, oh my god, please let me call down a thunder bird to destroy my enemies.
How do writers not immediately get how racist that shit is? That's like saying in the future, like, black people can throw exploding watermelons or something. It's
just terrible. Yeah, and the fact that you already had a West book, I was like, great, you did it already, but then you made another West book and just made it all...
Isn't it like the third one? I'm pretty sure that there's also Lone Star State or something, so there's at least a few more...
Oh yeah, they made Lone Star its own thing of just like, here's the coalition thing of Lone Star.
So they have a lot of books about the Old West. Also, I believe Spirit West has the race of lumpy cactus people in it.
Which is the only decent thing in that book, is you can be a cactuar if you really want to.
Yeah, so they don't look like cactuar. They're not fast or anything. They're just lumpy, misshapen, goofball-looking cactus monsters that you
can
play
as. Yeah, they're that guy from Marvel vs. Capcom.
Oh, a Mingo.
Yeah, they're a Mingo.
Sure. That's fine. He's the barrel cactus variant of that species.
Yeah.
That was a deep pull making me remember stuff from Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Okay, so there you go. Those are the best and worst supplements ever made. Maybe we'll cover some of those sometime, but I know we have one supplement that is coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
All right.
Right down the pipe. Yeah.
Yeah, well, while we're on questions, you want to keep answering a few?
Yeah, sure, let's do it.
All right. So this one comes to us from Lawrence, who sent it in, and here it comes. I'm really interested in playing RPGs, and I have a massive collection of source books. However, I also don't have very many friends, and the ones I do have basically have no interest in RPGs. How would I go about finding a group to play with?
Well, it really depends on where you are and what you're looking for.
A lot of proximity to game store matters here.
Yeah, so if you're near a game store, great. Usually game stores have a little bulletin board up there that you can put up like, hey, looking for players, or find a thing that says, I am looking for players, and go join a group. A lot of them run D&D encounters, or they'll have a role-playing society thing where they'll do like Pathfinder or whatever. And even if that's not particularly what you want to play, it does at least get you playing some games if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the internet, most RPG sites will have at least one thread dedicated to finding other people in your area. Now, this might entail you having to drive for like an hour and a half to get to a place.
I tried that once.
Yeah, and it's not great, but if you're talking about once a month gaming, then it can be fine.
Yeah.
Because if you're talking about a weekly game, always driving at least an hour and a half there and back, spending 3 hours just to get a game in, might not be worth it for you. And then, of course, there's the play-by-post online for any given place as well.
Although that's not getting you outside, which is, you know, one of the nice things about gaming is getting out there and socializing. I really strongly recommend doing the game store game night thing, because I've had some horror stories, which we're going to talk about almost immediately. But I've had some horror stories with going to people's houses that I have not met to go play role-playing games. So if you go to like a Pathfinder night or something, it's a little more direct. It's a little more, you know, I hate to use it because I hate when people use it, but the role-playing instead of role-playing thing where it's all about clearing the dungeon as quickly as possible. But the important thing is you're meeting people, you're laughing with people, they're going to have games, they're going to bring you into their actual games.
And the real nice thing is, I mean, I don't want to say that the whole play-by-post online thing is bad. You can get a lot of really fun stories from that, and it allows you to generally play games you would never be able to find enough players for, because either it's too niche of a subject, or it's so weird of a system that you're not going to find people that are generally receptive to it. But when you're playing in person with people, it's so much better because you can immediately play off of someone. Whether it's just how they look while they're saying something or what they say immediately reminds you of whatever, the interplay between people for role-playing and even just in combat, being able to tell someone while they're doing something like, oh man, this is going to be great, we'll do whatever, or reacting to someone doing some awesome crit and killing a guy when they shouldn't have. There's a great bonding sense of watching something.
Yeah.
So as much as you could say, oh yeah, we have a book club and we all read a book and then come back and talk about it, it's different than, say, getting together and watching a movie at the same time as other people, because it's more of a shared experience.
Yeah. Ultimately, that's why we started this podcast at all, because we wanted to have an excuse to talk about the games we spend all of our time reading anyway.
Yeah.
So there you go. So yeah, I definitely recommend game nights. That's definitely, for me, that would be the way to go to meet people. The other thing is that a lot of the people doing any kind of game night game are also regular tabletop gamers. I've met some decent game groups primarily by playing 40K.
Yeah, and the nice thing as well is playing in a structured at a game store setting means that you can tell what people you do or do not want to play with in a structured area where you don't have to feel weird about going like, oh, I really don't want to play with them anymore. If you just don't show up to D&D encounters 1 week, or you go sit at a different table the next week, no one's really like, oh my god, you're being so rude, how dare you?
Yeah.
That whole nerd fallacy thing. It's just, oh, I'm not going to play that anymore because whatever.
Right. Now, like I said, this is a good excuse for me to tell horror stories about going to random games where I pulled the flyer down off the wall. I don't know if you've ever done that.
I have gone to a few in my college days because at that point, I just didn't have any of my normal gaming group. And I played GURPS, I played Rifts, and I played D&D with different groups.
Mm-hmm.
All of them basically terrible.
Yeah.
The GURPS group was probably the best, and that's sad because I far prefer D&D and Rifts as a game.
I have a story that involves a group where me and my friend Megan decided we'd like to play some role-playing games together. We didn't have a group, so we pulled one of those tags off a flyer, and we met the group at a game store to play some D&D. And we made characters, and they really heavily vetted our characters. Like, I had a little elf bard, or half-elf bard, or whatever, and she had a halfling rogue or something, and they were very careful and very specific to the, like, you guys have to follow the rules and play, it's weird that you have a stat that's higher than 16, are you sure you rolled that correctly? And we're like, fine, we'll make these bare-bones, extremely basic characters. We arrive to the game, and everyone at the table has a 25 in something.
Huh.
And this is second edition D&D. There was a Minotaur fighter that did everything in the entire game with a 25 strength. One time, he left the game, we played with this group maybe three times. One time, he left the game early, crying, because his 25 strength Minotaur was not able to lift the side of a castle.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of horror story that you can look forward to. Oddly, I've done this three or four times. I think I've only ever played D&D with them. I had the one, I mentioned it on our last afterthought where I went to a gaming session and it was all gay jokes.
Yeah.
Like, all just gross, unpleasant. And this was at some guy's house, and it was my first time ever meeting any of them there. And it was just gross, gay, gross-out panic humor.
Yeah.
For about the first half hour of wacky hijinks of, oh my gosh, watch your butthole.
Thankfully, I never got that because I was in Santa Cruz, so there wasn't going to be any of that. But most of my random gaming encounters was just either people not giving a shit about anything, which was the Rifts group that just didn't care.
Yeah.
Sat there, throwback, talking about people they were meeting on Hot or Not.
Oh, Lord.
Who remembers Hot or Not? Yeah.
Well, I can tell you at least one of my sessions, I met up with them the first time on College Club.
Woo!
So there you go.
And then the D&D game was just, like, nine players.
Yeah, same thing. Nine players.
And I think maybe me and one other person were doing anything, but the rest of it was just like, I'm running at the skeleton, and I'm going to be like, you should bone me. And I'm like, oh, God, I need to leave right now.
Yeah, no, I've been in that situation. So there you go. Those are the horrors of doing the whole just pulling a tag off a flyer and joining a game. Go to a game night.
But do it anyway, because it's awesome.
Oh, it's great. And then report back to us. Okay.
Let us know your dumb horror stories.
Yeah. There you go. And I don't expect any of my listeners are going to be the sort of people that are these horror stories. So, you know, go forth, be a good gamer, don't make gross jokes, and then report on the gross jokes, because they're funny after the fact.
Yeah.
All right. Last one, and I'm looking forward to this one. It's the first anonymous question we've received.
Yay, anonymous for questions.
Here we go. How can you guys justify dumping on Stormbringer so much when you've never read the books?
Well, because we did raid Stormbringer, and it was bad.
That was easy.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's true. When we do licensed games, which come up from time to time, fairly commonly, actually, we have a few more down the pipe. People are really bugging us to do Tales from the Crypt. And we just did Duckman, of course. That's a big licensed game. So when we do them, it basically just comes down to prior life experience, whether or not we have time to take in the material. We have to put these games out, or these reviews out, once every 2 weeks. So I don't have time to read a bunch of Moorcock books. And frankly, I didn't think we really needed to. Not because I think they're bad, I don't know, I've never read them, but because we've already done licensed games in a variety of other ways. When we did Buffy, we were both familiar. When we did Star Wars, we were both familiar. Actually, when we did Buffy, you were familiar and I wasn't.
Oh yeah,
so we've done it that way.
I'm the person who has watched the seasons multiple times, and you have seen some episodes.
Yes. When we did EverQuest, neither of us was familiar.
Yeah, so I played for, like, a month.
Yeah, so we recruited someone who was. So we decided for Stormbringer, let's go in blind. and let's see if this licensed book based on the works of Michael Moorcock can convince us to like the works of Michael Moorcock. And it turns out the answer is no.
Yeah. I mean, and it's one of those things that it's not exactly we're dumping on it because we're like, yeah, Moorcock sucks. We're dumping on it because it's bad. The same way reason we dumped on the Indiana Jones RPG.
Yeah.
It's not like we're sitting there going, Indiana Jones is garbage and you shouldn't watch these movies. No, they're great. I mean, all three of them. All three of those movies are great.
Yeah. The three Indiana Jones movies that exist are great.
Yeah.
I speak, of course, of the young Indiana Jones TV movie, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And then, what's the other one? American Graffiti, which is a real weird offshoot. He doesn't,
oh yeah,
put a hat on.
It's so weird, but it's there if you look.
Yeah, yeah, it's really hard to find. It's also in The Big Chill, where you can just see Indiana Jones' very young corpse for like a second.
but yeah, it's just a game that tells you nothing about the setting.
Well, it tells you a lot about
how awesome Elric is.
It's very dry about the setting. And I don't want to do this again where we,
But
that's not the point to me. It's very dryly delivered, and it leaves you with the sense of feeling like you're never going to get to play as the cool guy. I'd say the worst example was the monster section, which was purely delivered in terms of one-off monsters that Elric killed once.
Yeah, and that's fine if you want to go, all right, well, the only real way I know that anything exists is what's in the book, so I can only include monsters that are in the book, and the only monsters that are in the book are the ones Elric fights.
Yeah.
Great.
So.
But it also goes out of its way to remind you of how Elric was able to beat them.
Yeah. So anytime we were dumping on Elric in the podcast, and we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely did. It's purely because the game that we read left us with a negative impression of him. So we have no idea what's up with the Michael Moorcock
books. Also, the Stormbringer book is a system that is at its best sort of innocuous and bland,
its worst
real bad.
Yeah. Like we were talking about earlier, that it's like they took a workhorse of a system and loaded it as if it was a work elephant.
Oh, yeah. No, you just put so much stuff onto a generic system, and sometimes it can work.
Yeah.
A lot of the time it doesn't
in certain ways. There was some stuff in that book that absolutely should have worked. The whole chaos magic system, like with a demon summoning, that should have been really cool. But
the magic system itself was fine. The whole, like, chaos law alignment was fine. That outgrowth that you generally saw coming from there that went into like D&D and all that afterwards, that was fine.
I mean, to a degree. The whole Stormbringer having 666 points of evil, that was a little shenanigan-y, but whatever. We're fine with it. It was just a BRP game. You know, it's hard to really hang that much hate on the rules, so we had to go with purely what's going on with what this book makes us think of a character we've never heard of before. There you go. There's the answers to that question. You feeling good?
I'm feeling so good.
Okay.
I've had an entire Bartles and James. How could I not be feeling good?
Because it's been less than an hour. So in more than an hour, you'll have a headache.
Yeah. But for now, I've got that sweet, syrupy goodness.
Fun fact about the System Mastery crew. Very occasionally, we get together and drink Bartles and James wine coolers because we are 12.
Yeah. We really need to make someone buy it for us, though. We gotta find a hobo to go into a liquor store and buy us some Bartles and James, and then we'll give them a couple bucks.
You say that like we didn't just do that like a month ago. We sent in a guy standing in front of the liquor store to buy the two of us, men in our 30s, Bartles and James, and some Boone's strawberry wine.
Ah, Boone's.
Just because it would be funny.
Yeah.
That's the kind of headache-inducing idiots we are. Now, once again, if you'd like to read a Duckman RPG written by a couple of headache-inducing idiots, you can simply download it off this page. Please do so. Feel free to play it. Let us know if it works or not. We aren't going to play it. We don't have time for that sort of shit. After all, we already reviewed it. We know.
Oh, yeah. We know everything about it.
Yeah.
Obviously.
My uncle told me all this stuff about it.
Also, because we made a Duckman RPG, that does mean that we have seen every episode of Duckman and are experts on it. So please, grill us on our knowledge of the Duckman. Ugh.
You're breaking this on canon. I already established I didn't even know how many seasons of it there were. So, okay. Otherwise, this has been the Afterthought Podcast, our third episode. You can always find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com, System Mastery on Facebook. Drop us questions at SystemMastery@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter, iTunes, or Facebook. Wait, Twitter, iTunes, or Stitcher. And you can probably guess what we're called on all of those things.
Yeah.
Jerks.
Ha ha! It's funny because it's true.
We need more listener questions, so please send us your listener questions. We don't care what they are, we'll answer them.
Oh yeah, it doesn't even need to be about role-playing. You just send us questions about things.
Oh yeah, send us questions about life.
Yeah, just send us a question like, hey man, how's your dick? Yeah. Really get into
it. Yeah, how are our dicks? We need to get in there and talk about that. Really get into our actor and artist's pain. Oh. All right. So, thank you for listening, and you have a lovely week.